We are in Chayvus Halvavus, Bezos Hashem, Chayvus Halvavus, Shara Avodas Elikim, Perek Yud, 10th Perek. Toward the beginning of the Perek, paragraph that starts Omar HaSeichel. We began discussing the place, first of all, the understanding that all of our character traits have a place.
It's 340, by the way.
Thank you. In the English edition page,
it's 340.
Page 340. Yashar Koyach. So we begin again with the preface that we know that we all have a whole array of character traits, what we call midas. And we generally tend to think of certain midas as good, certain midas as bad. Generosity, compassion might be thought of as good midas. Callousness, stinginess, laziness will be thought of as bad midas. But really, that's a misnomer. Mida, all of our character traits have their place, and we have to know exactly how and when to apply each one. That's what creates the fully rounded true soldier of Hashem, one who knows exactly when is the time for each one, which has two points to it. So again, as we've said often, when we talk about a good midah, what we mean is that this is something that should be used 95% of the time. A bad midah is one that if you're using it regularly, it's going to be bad news. It only should be used like 3% of the time. So, and here we began discussing the various examples. Last week we spoke about happiness versus grief. And now we're going to move on to another set of midas. B'chlal midas sayich shtei midas. Among your midas are another two midas. V'heim ha-mayra v'hatikva. And they are fearfulness versus hope. We need to fine tune this a little bit in order to understand why one works against the other. The way I would say is, where is the place for optimism? And where is the place to say, I don't know if I should be optimistic here. I wouldn't exactly say pessimism. I would say sometimes you're approaching a situation and you say, let me go ahead, things will be fine. And sometimes you approach a situation and you say, I don't know if I want to get involved with this. I don't know how it's going to turn out. Where is the place for each one? When should you go with an optimistic attitude? Let me go ahead. It's going to work out okay. And when do you go with an attitude of, I better back off? That's how I'm understanding here, Mayra versus Tikva. Again, we're in Perek Yud. Avodas Elokim Perek Yud. In the middle of the second paragraph, Omar HaSeichel. I'm imagining that in all editions, it's the second paragraph. Paragraph that starts Omar HaSeichel. Okay? So, if anyone's still trying to find it, let me know. Okay? And by the way, throughout this year, don't hesitate to interrupt me with what are we up to or anything like that. It's fine. Mekayim ha-mayra. Where do you use fearfulness? Shatia be'inyin shemevi al inyin sheyitzarech. Now, we're going to be moving through the Chavis HaLavis, just reading it as is. It's going to start sounding like a mantra. All the different midas, the place to use the negative one is where you're facing something that might get you in trouble, and the place to use the positive one is where not. But we have to understand well exactly the point in each one. As where do you apply fearfulness? It says, when you're facing a situation that can bring you significant distress, that won't end up good. And there's no way that you'll be able to get out of it. Meaning when you are facing something of such stakes that can get you into trouble forever, that's the place to say, let me back away from this. I'll just start with a material example, and then we'll move on to some really what the Chazal is talking about. Just for example, and as a kid, I was once walking with my father down the street, and we saw a car come zooming down the street at top speed, being driven by a 19-year-old, 18, 19-year-old, who was with a group of friends and obviously trying to impress them. And he was zooming down the street. It was a street in the middle of the city in a rather reckless way. So my father utilized that to get across a point. He said, that looks like bravery. What it really is stupidity. He said, this person is young. He doesn't yet know what a car is. He doesn't yet know what a car is. And therefore, so what? He's really like braver than people who are 50 years old. He said, no, he just has not yet experienced what a car can do. And that's why, you know, why not rip through the streets? In other words, it's not a chokhmah not to be fearful when you're facing something that you should be fearful about. Bravery will come into play when sometimes you're facing something that you should be scared of, but you understand that nevertheless, the situation calls on me to put myself in danger and to move forward. That'll sometimes be the case, let's say, right? In a battle or something like that. When a person is brave just because he ignores the danger, so don't call that brave, call that stupid. So what is the Chavis Alvavis getting at, though? Chavis Alvavis is obviously applying this to spirituality. So I'll give an example. There's a story with the Chazon Ish. Now, this is a harsh story. So if you're not ready for this, hold your ears.
Yes,
there was a story with the Chazon Ish where he had a Talmid who used to come in with him on Shabbos. And one week, the Talmid showed up very, very sweaty, and how it looked like he hadn't come from down the block as he usually did. So the Talmud told the Chazon Ish that he was away. He had been out of Bnei Brak for Shabbos. He walked a very far distance from wherever he was to Bnei Brak. So the Chazon Ish said to him, "What about Chum Shabbos? This was in a settlement that was far. He had to walk a long way through unsettled area, and there's a limit of 2,000 amos. You're not allowed to walk 2,000 amos. We'll call that, for our purposes, we'll call that 4,000 feet." Beyond your town. Not allowed to walk 4,000 feet beyond your town on Shabbos. This was more than that. So he said, what about Chum Shabbos? So the Talmud said, I heard that it was set up. It was taken care of. I said, what do you mean you heard? He said, people were saying that. He said, did you actually go and inquire? Did you clarify in a concrete way? So he kind of sheepishly said, no. Here's the part you have to hold your ears. The Chazon Ish said, you are a mechalal Shabbos b'mezid. That you desecrated Shabbos deliberately. Please don't touch my wine until you do tshuva. Okay. Now the Talmud did tshuva on the spot. And that was really what the Chazon Ish was getting at. The Chazon Ish was getting a point across. That there are situations that you have to be scared. Kind of not clear, but you're facing very, very serious stakes. You can't just say kind of not clear. Yeah, it's probably okay. This is not the place to say it's probably okay. Now, this lines up well with another statement of the Chazon Ish, which is actually becoming relevant now. And some issue of Shemitah came up, and the Chazon Ish was very, very much deliberating about some halachic ruling. And the person who was talking to him said to the Chazon Ish, why are you taking it so intensely? It's anyways all the Rabbana now. It's all rabbinic now. So the Chazon Ish looked at him and he said, I grew up in Russia. He said, in Russia, you grew up knowing that that you have to be scared of a Cossack. A Cossack. Is that how you pronounce it? Cossack, Cossack. They were scary people. He said, so I grew up scared of a Cossack. If I would see a Cossack in the street, I got scared. He said, now, let me assure you that if I saw a regiment of Cossacks in the street, I was completely petrified. He said, but a regiment of Cossacks is not as scary to me as the thought of violating a derabbanan. Now, we know that, yes, derabbanans are more lenient than questions of Torah law. But nevertheless, the intent is not that you can just take a nonchalant approach. It means that when you're considering the factors, there may be more room for leniency in terms of reaching the final ruling. But it doesn't mean that, oh, whatever, it's all the Rabbanan anyways. When you're facing a question of Hashem's will, there has to be a certain fearfulness. This is the place for fearfulness. This is the place not to be brave. And this can be relevant in very many situations. Sometimes we're in a situation where we're not quite sure about the Heksher, right? An affair. We're not quite sure about the Heksher. You're in an area on Shabbos. You're not quite sure about the Eruv, etc., right? And you can kind of take an approach, oh, it's probably okay. Or you take an approach of, no, this is something of high stakes. This is something of high stakes. And I can't just forage ahead. I can't just dive ahead and say, I'll figure it out afterwards. So this is where the Chavis Alvavis is telling us.
Can I ask a question?
Oh, we made our point, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so take, you want to go into a new business, okay? So that, to me, involves both. Like, you should be cautious because maybe it'll fail, but you shouldn't be so cautious that you can't do it either. Like, you should also trust. Like, it seems to be like a combo. Like,
that's right. So it's very interesting. The Chavis Alvavis is not relating to the whole material angle of it. It's true. You're right. This is where there's another term for the Chavis Alvavis that Milinowitz used to quote all the time. When you're trying to achieve something, part of caution is not being overly cautious. But like you say, sometimes a person needs to get something done, but you know, you can start deliberating. There's a million ways to do it. This way might be better than that way. You know, let's just not do anything. And so my father used to tell me, you know, when I would start obsessing over different decisions, he would say, the best thing is to make the right decision. Second best is the wrong decision. But worst is no decision at all, right? So you're right. There will often be situations where you have to combine the two. And you know what? This comes back to the point that we made before of combining caution with bravery. Be aware of the risks. Consider the risks. And then consider the need. And it's true, you often have to make a careful decision. And it's like that with issues of halacha also. But the idea is, right, you don't want to be rash. And you don't want to be paralyzed by either of these two midas. And this comes back to the point, yeah, we're talking about on the material level. Each of these midas have their upsides and downsides. A person who does not know how to be fearful will be getting himself into a lot of trouble in life. He might also achieve great things. You know, take gambles. Sometimes they work, sometimes they won't, right? A person who is overly fearful might just be paralyzed. Rabbi Victor Miller used to bring out the point that the truth is, that, yeah, this is relevant, and Ruchni is also. Rabbi Victor Miller would often point out that there's a list, Chazal tell us a list of a number of people who never sinned. Never committed a sin, right? Just off the top of my head, they include, right, there's Binyamin, Amram, Yishai, that's right. Who? Chushim Ben Lamed, on the list. There's a few different versions and different sources. Kilav, that's right. Kilav, the son of Shlomo. There's a number of people who are named as never having committed a sin. Now, it's interesting to note that none of those names, Rabbi Victor Miller used to point this out, the all-stars of our history are not on this list. Moshe Rabbeinu is not on the list. Avraham Avinu is not on the list. Avraham Melech is not on the list. David is not on the list. They're very, very great. These people are very great people, but they are not the shining stars in our history. So Rabbi Victor Miller would make the point, this is a bold point, this is coming from his authority. He said, the great achievers made mistakes. They understood that there's a lot out there to do. And this comes back to what we said before. They were weighing the risk-benefit factor in Ruchnius also. There are things that have to be achieved, big things that have to be achieved. I might make mistakes. I'm going to do my best. And there will be mistakes, but you know what? At the end of the day, the profit outweighed it. The profit outweighed the mistakes. The greatest people in our history went down because of their achievements. Now, when I say achievements, I don't mean, this is important to stress, when you say achievements, don't think in material terms. Don't think in terms of achievements, a person who built a very great chesed empire. That's great. It's great if a person builds three every day if you can. But when we talk about achievements, we mean achievements in the realm of personal development, in terms of their own personal victories in their own lives. They're making themselves into great enterprises of Avodas Hashem, making their homes into great enterprises of Avodas Hashem. In the case of many of these people, it then spilled over to a much greater scale.
So let me ask you this. On these two, is one you're supposed to use 95% and the other only 5%? It doesn't seem so like okay, I can understand joy and grief. You're supposed to mostly be joyful. Are you supposed to be brave and hopeful and very rarely?
No, so I framed it that way. Not necessarily with all the Midas does it split in that way, that one is necessarily meant to be more dominant than the other. Uh-huh. He's more putting his focus on where do you apply each one? Uh-huh. What percentage will it be? That depends on how it plays out in your life. Right? Whatever it is, we're getting back to the point. When it comes to issues of Ruchnius, that is the place, yes, to be fearful, yes, to be cautious. Now, like we're saying, you may come from a Ruchnius, from a spiritual line of reasoning that says, even though there are scary stakes here, I still have to move forward and do what I have to do, because otherwise very important things won't get done spiritually. But our point is, what's more relevant to us is not to have a nonchalant, cavalier attitude. That's probably okay. It's probably okay. Don't assume that it's probably okay. Be fearful. The stakes here are important. Okay. Now, Ach Mekoy Matikva, where is the place to be optimistic? And this is also very important. Shetishtadli Bahagdamas Hamavias HaToyv Elech. Now again, if you just read this as is, it's going to sound very simplistic and kind of like a mantra, but let's understand the profundity behind it. First, I'll just read it as is. Where is the place to be hopeful? Where's the place to be optimistic? Shetishtadli Bahagdamas Hamavias HaToyv Elech. Go about the measures that are going to bring you great benefit. Omechayves Lach Hamin Imois, and that are going to bring you great pleasures, in a way that no one can take away from you. Nothing will be able to get in between you and them. When going about doing mitzvahs that Hashem commanded. So where's the place to be optimistic? Be optimistic. If you do a mitzvah, things will be good. Now that sounds very simplistic. Like why wouldn't I? When you're wondering if you should take lulav on sukkis, so you're going to be, you know, kind of deliberating between fearfulness. Should I do this? Should I not do it? No, be optimistic. Take the lulav; it'll probably be okay. He's making a chashuv point here, also. This is something that is especially relevant to many people in our times. I wouldn't say it about a particular mitzvah. Should I give a shekel to tzedakah? Yeah, it'll probably be a good idea. It's not what he's saying here. I would apply this to our spiritual efforts in general. Our spiritual efforts in general. If we'll say it in a very broad way. Say it in a very broad way. Sometimes a person learns Musar. A person learns Musar, starts exposing himself to the very, very high demands in our service of Hashem that Rabbi Yoina and the like expected of themselves, and how tough they were on themselves in looking out for pitfalls. And a person starts saying, you know what? It's so complicated. It's so tough. The demands are so high that I can't really succeed. I can't really succeed. This is something to be careful with Musa. Sometimes Musa can bring a person to the wrong place in this sense. If a person learns Musa without a broader perspective and without being guided by live guides, you have to be getting it funneled down to you from people who know how to apply it in our door. A person, it can actually bring a person to a place of yush, to a place of You can never really please Hashem. The demands are so great. Whatever I do, I'm not going to, I'm going to work on having kavana in davening. Then you learn the Chovis Halvavis, right? The Chovis Halvavis, where he says that, he talks about what a chutzpah, any word of davening without kavana is. So you say to yourself, so what's the point? You know, my davening is going to be, I'm going to work on having 15% kavana, and then 85% of my davening is chutzpah, right? So when you really, really start learning up the standards, and you say, how can I succeed? How can I succeed? You can't live up to it all. Now, here's where the Chovis Halvavis is coming and telling you, this is the place to apply optimism. And I want to stress his lashon, Shishti Shtadli Bahakdamas. I said Hakdamas, I said you should put in effort, invest efforts in the measures that will bring you the good. But really, Hakdamas doesn't mean measure. What does Hakdama mean? Hakdama means a preface, right? A preface. What that means is you have to be optimistic that if you put your efforts into spiritual success, you will succeed. Not only do you have to be optimistic, but it's actually true. What do you mean I'll succeed? I've been putting efforts into working on my midas for the last 10 years, and I still find myself having the same failings. But here's what you have to understand. You've been putting in efforts for the last 10 years, so you have been succeeding. You may still be having certain failings. You may feel like you're just, first of all, if you're really putting in efforts, you are getting more refined over time. Just, it might not satisfy the objective pace. You may say, there's a certain need I have to eliminate. And otherwise, I'm going to be struggling with this need my whole life. 10 years later, you're still struggling with the need. You've made a little bit of progress, but you feel like it's not enough. But the truth is that, on the contrary, the success is the fact that you are working at it. That is the goal. The goal is to be working at it the whole time. Now, on the contrary, the Sfarim hold up very, very high standards and very high demands of Avodas Hashem in order for us to understand that you can never be complacent. You always have to be working. But also understand that if you apply yourself, if you're working, you are succeeding. We don't know exactly how Hashem set it up. Hashem designed each person's struggles according to his discretion. And the Tanya makes this point. You know the Sefer Tanya? It's not its real name. You know what the real name of Sefer Tanya is? Sefer Abenuni. The Sefer Tanya is called Tanya because that's the first word of the Sefer. But he called it Sefer Abenuni. He spends a lot of time in the beginning of the Sefer discussing the classes of Beinoni versus Tzaddik. Beinoni means a mediocre person versus the Tzaddik. And he reaches a conclusion, he develops this at length, he reaches a conclusion that first might sound like a little demoralizing, but then he goes on to show how this is really the meaning, the profound meaning of our roles in Hashem's world. And he basically says, we are not tzaddikim. That doesn't sound very nice. He says, we are beinonim. What does a beinonim mean? Now, of course, different terms are applied in different contexts, and you have to know how it's being used in each context. But what he says is, a tzaddik is a person who rises above his challenges and is not challenged by them anymore. He moves ahead, he makes progress, he rises above them, and he moves to a place where he's not challenged by these things anymore. They're not. He says a Beinoni is a person who works, succeeds, overcomes, but still hasn't locked himself into that place. I'm saying in a very, very broad way right now. It's much, much developed at great length there. And he keeps on coming up against the challenge. He works at it, but he still feels the same temptation. He starts getting discouraged. I've been working at this and I've been making progress, but why am I still tempted by it? Why am I still provoked? Why do I still feel the urge? And he says on the contrary, he says, don't be discouraged by this, because this is exactly what Hashem wants. For most of us, this is what Hashem wants. There will be areas that you will master. But there will be areas that will continue to be struggles for a long time. You'll make progress, but the struggle won't go away. And on the contrary, the success is continuing to work on these things your whole life, to appreciate that that's the success, to appreciate that that's exactly what Hashem wants from you. So this optimism is that if you understand, if you are going to be investing efforts into the hakdamas, into the prefaces of ruchnius, meaning I might not see myself succeeding, and here's where optimism comes into play. I have to tell myself, no, I am succeeding. I can succeed, and I am succeeding because this is exactly what Hashem wants from me. Hashem wants me to put in the efforts. You spend your life putting in the efforts into the various areas that demand those efforts. You are succeeding. So often, right? A young couple, a young man and young woman get married, and they find that they're challenged by each other. And when you have the more conscientious, so there's two levels of how this is expressed. And all of a sudden it turns out that, what do you know? It's not just smooth sailing. There are actually humps in the road, right? So there are two ways that this will be expressed. Some will say, I thought she was perfect. I thought he was perfect. I didn't realize she has this fault, he has this fault, et cetera, et cetera. Now, then there's a bit of a more refined level. This is how I've heard it expressed by couples also. They come and say, I didn't realize this would be such a challenge for me, right? It's kind of like, the truth is that marriage, as well as parenthood, all of a sudden brings you to learn things about yourself that you weren't properly aware of. Depends what kind of glasses you're wearing. It could be that you're only learning things about your spouse, right? Discovering this, you're discovering this, you're discovering this. Being married to me is a bowl of roses. There's no problems with that. But he, she has this issue and this issue and this issue and this issue, right? But again, with a little bit of a more, of a deeper, of a more refined perspective, it's, oh, I have this I have to work on, and I have that I have to work on, this challenge and this challenge, right? I would also like my spouse to be working on it, but I appreciate that I also have these challenges. And sometimes it can even be demoralizing. Like I find that I'm a much more petty person than I thought I was. But you know what? That is exactly the idea. That's exactly the idea. Hashem, we've discussed this other times from the Ramchal. The neshama is a perfect being. The neshama is a perfect being. In order to give our role in this world purpose, Hashem tacked on faults. Discovering that you have faults is not a problem at all. Being complacent with those faults is. But discovering that you have faults, on the contrary, now you are starting to learn, you're starting to identify the very specific role that Hashem granted you in this world, and approach it with a sense of mission. Approach it with a sense of mission. I'm going to tackle these faults. Some of them, I might overcome more quickly, more significantly. The spouse's feedback definitely helps with that. Some of them, I might be working with, and I might continue to struggle with for a while. But that is itself the success. Or to put this whole thing differently. A person reads a biography about a very great person and says, that's the person I want to be. You suddenly aim high. You're told, you know, we all have bechira, you can choose to be whatever you want to be. And also the young man decides he's aiming his, setting his sights on Reb Moshe Feinstein. He read all the things, both about his character, about his diligence in learning, etc. Throws himself into it. He's on a high for 48 to 72 hours, and then he crashes, right? Or the young woman who reads a biography about Rebbetzin Kanievsky. That's not how it works in Ruchnius. You should read these things in order to have a horizon, in order to have a frame of reference, in order to have higher goals. But the real chachma of progress is to be able to pinpoint exactly where am I on the map? Where am I on the map? And what is the next little step that I need to take from there? Whether we're talking about, let's talk primarily about character, right? About improving our midas, about improving the way we relate to the people around us. No, don't expect to turn into a Hillel overnight. But identify the challenges and tackle them with the optimism that the Chovetz Halevavos is talking about. This is where you apply optimism. This is where you say, I can succeed. I will succeed. And if you're still struggling with it 5 years later, tell yourself, I am succeeding because I'm working on it. I'm making small steps of progress. I'm having ups and I'm having downs and I'm keeping on pushing. And that is my success. So this is the place for optimism. Optimism that if I want to succeed in Avodas Hashem, I will. Just have to understand what success means. Okay. We move on. You have another two midas. This is going to sound synonymous to the previous one to an extent, but it's a bit different. Hagvura v'hamayrach. Gvura, we would say, means bravery. Or gvura, however the word hits you. V'hamayrach. Versus being cowardly. Hamakayim v'ashimush b'gvura. Where do you apply gvura, being brave, being strong? B'fgoya b'oyvei Hashem li'lachim ba. When it comes to fighting enemies of Hashem, not to be scared off by them, to fight for what's right. Usvoil kol etzev, and another aspect is, usvoil kol etzev kol nisoyen b'rutzoyen habayris al rutzoyen chasidah. And to be willing to tolerate any tribulation, any ordeal in the service of Hashem. You need to tell yourself, if Hashem put me into this situation, that means that He sees in me more strength than I think I have. And I can do this. I can do this. Let's elaborate on it a little bit on both of these points. So, Gevura, when it comes to stand up for what's right, not to be scared. So there's a famous story. I've probably told it here in the past. If I see everybody nodding their heads, I'll stop. But there's a famous story that actually brings together both the Gevura point and the Azus point that's coming next. The city of Hamburg, we're looking for a Rav. And city of Hamburg was a big Chashevik healer, as a big prestigious city. And therefore, you know, they had to have a Rav of very high caliber. And there was the very famous Rebbe of Hamburg, one of the great Achronim. And when he was chosen for the job, he was chosen for the position of becoming the Rav of Hamburg. At that point, he wasn't yet called the Rebbe of Hamburg. Okay, so it was a whole, you know, there was all the negotiation and all the discussion preceding his installment, as these things work, as these things tend to be. It was a committee headed by the lay leaders of the community, right? They were looking for a Rav, headed by the lay leaders of the community. You had a few very influential people who headed the Vad of the city, and they were in touch with him. And okay, they decided they wanted him to become their Rav. And this was an influential city, an affluent city, and they spared no efforts giving him the kavod he deserved as a Rav when he would actually come into the city, the way he'd be received, setting him up very comfortably in terms of the home they allocated for him, in terms of the various conditions involved in his job, etc. They spared no efforts. And the people involved, the lay leaders of the community, were very, very sincere, conscientious people who were working hard to do it as optimally as possible, and to make him come in with a feeling of being of, of, of being respected, of being appreciated, of feeling like he's settling into the position very comfortably. Okay. So, of course, he had a lot of back and forth with these people throughout this period. But the main one was normally called, you know, the Rosh HaKohol, the term was in those times, the Rosh HaKohol, like the head of the Vad of the community, call it president of the Jewish Council of the city of Hamburg. This was, of course, an influential man, a very wealthy man, a man who controlled a lot of the goings-on in Hamburg, owned a lot of property in Hamburg. Okay. And him and Rebbe Fall of Hamburg started off their relationship. They'd be working together. Very warm, a lot of covet. Fine. Rebbe Fall actually comes to the city. His arrival was well planned. It was a whole reception. And it was a very great day. They made a whole big day out of it. He comes, he settles in, and he's basically moving into his role now as the Rav of Hamburg. The next morning, he's starting in his position. One of the first things that happens as he's sitting in his new office is that there's a knock at the door. There's a woman who would like to see him. Okay? Woman comes in, obviously a poor woman, and she introduces herself. She says that she is one of the very many tenants of the properties of this Rosh HaKohol. This Rosh HaKohol. I got my first nod of the head. You've heard the story.
Okay. Not from you.
Oh, okay. and she has some grievance. I don't know exactly what happened. Whatever it is, she has a serious grievance against the way it was handled. And of course, he's not busy dealing with all the tenants there. He has hundreds of tenants around the city. He has his people. He has his managers. She wasn't able to get the right attention from them, and she is coming to summon him to a din Torah. She's coming to summon him to a din Torah. Okay. So Rebbe Fall of Hamburg sends his shamish, who this Rosh HaKohol had installed, right, put at his disposal. Rebbe Fall of Hamburg sends this, his shamish, to summon the Rosh HaKohol. Okay. The shamish comes, he says, the Rav is summoning you. Oh, is there a problem? He's all ready to come. No, he's actually summoning you to a din Torah. Din Torah, what? This woman, whatever. Oh, yeah, you heard about that. You know, from a few of his different managers, that there's this whole to-do with this woman. Tell the Rav, I'll get back to him about it. I'll be in touch with him about it. Nope. The shamish comes back and tells the Rav that, okay, the Rosh HaKohol said he'll be in touch with you about it. The Rav said, be in touch? I issued a summons. He has to come. So the shamish comes back to the Rosh HaKohol and says, no, the rabbi said you have to come. You have to come now. I can't come now because I have a lot going on, but tell the Rav, I'll make sure to get back to him. He goes back to the Rav, and the Rav says, wait a minute, he doesn't know what his summons means. I want him to come now. Doesn't matter what's going on. If he has a meeting going on, he should cancel the meeting. So the shamish is already starting to get a little nervous, but both him and the Rav get their paycheck. He's the one signing their paycheck, right? Goes back to the Rosh HaKohol. He's already starting a little bit hesitant. He said, no, the Rav is really insisting that you come now. Did you tell him that I said I'm not able to? Yes, I told him. So he said that he doesn't care. You have to drop whatever you're doing and come now. So a minute. He understood who the address is talking. You realize that you're talking about me? So yeah, he realized that you're talking about you out of the shamish, like Mamish doesn't know what to do with himself. He's squirming and like he did realize that he's talking about you. He said, "Mamish, go remind the Rav of everything I just did for him." Okay, the shamish comes back. He says, "He said to remind the Rav of everything he just did for you." So Rav Hamburg tells him, "Go back to him, tell him I appreciate it all, and he should come right now." Okay, the poor shamish goes back and manages to blurt it out. And now the Rosh HaKohol is really starting to get, he said, now tell the Rav to remember who holds his position in place. Okay, the poor shamish goes back. And the Rav of Hamburg tells him, tell him, okay, I remember, and he should come right now. So he goes back, and now the Rosh HaKohol is very upset. He said, okay, go tell the Rav that, ask him if Bechovat wants to think about maybe putting it off for another day or two. Does he really want? If he wants, I'm going to be there in an hour. But The Shamish comes back and tells the Rav, he's really starting, you know, the tones are getting threatening. And do you really want to do this? The Rav of Hamburg just smiles serenely and says, okay, so I'll see him in an hour. Okay. The Shamish is standing there shaking and quaking. And the Rav of Hamburg is completely serene. Completely serene. Nope. An hour, there's a knock on the door. And okay, open the door. Open the door, and in walk the Rosh HaKohel, accompanied by the whole Vad and by the woman. And they walk in and they say, Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. Now we know that you're fit to be our Rav. This is what we wanted to do. This was a test, right? They take out a L'chaim, and that was how he started his career. So this is a story with a happy ending. But this is a story that brings together what we're talking about, the meat of Gevura, and what we'll see soon, the meat of Azus. Boldness. But you can't go about it with the assumption that ultimately everybody will respect it and you'll get your kudos, because you have to be ready to do it when that won't be the case. Perhaps one of the stars that we have in this field, if we're talking about our recent history, is the Beis Halevi, who also, I'll just end with a couple of anecdotes just to bring out the point. The Beis Halevi was known for this midah. Lo yisa pnei ish. He was beholden only to Hashem, and not to, he wasn't scared of anybody else. Lo bipnei ish. That was where he starred. And it started right away. His first rabbinic position was in the city of Slutsk, a big chashuv city. That was where his first rabbinic position was, and he made it his business from the start. Before anything even happened, he made it his business to make it clear to the people who appointed him what their place is and what his place is. So just to illustrate the way his Rabbanus actually started was that when also he was brought into the city with great fanfare, and at the celebration of him becoming installed as the Rav, they handed him a beautiful parchment document with the Kehila, expressing how excited they are for him to become the Rav. It's Ksav Rabbanus, right? His we call it a writ of Rabbanus. So he looks at it. Now, the way it worked then was that there were different shuls for different professions. That apparently was common in back in earlier times, right? So you understand that the banker's shul did not look the same as the cobbler's shul, right? They were very located in very different streets, and they looked very differently. So he's looking at the Ksav Rabbanus and he sees representatives of all the prestigious kehilas in the town. There's representatives of the banker's kehila, and there's the representative of the fur trader's kehila, and the merchant's kehila, whatever it is. All of these there are representatives of, and he's looking down the list. He's reading down the list right as he's, you know, at the celebration of him being installed as the Rav. He's reading down the list, and then he looks up and he says, I don't understand. My appointment wasn't unanimous. So, of course it was. Look, I have everybody here on the list. It's, I don't see the tailors. I don't see representation of the tailor's shul. And I don't see representation of the cobbler's shul. Were these people opposed to my appointment? He said, no, of course not. But they don't really have a say in things. They don't have a say in things? Why not? No, I have to know that I was appointed by everybody. I need to see on this paper representatives of the cobbler's shul and the tailor's shul and the whatever it else, and the wagon driver's shul. They consider that a terrible bizoy, and what they have to go now to get them to agree to what the chush of the bankers already agreed on. But he insisted, and this really set the tone for his rabbanus. There's more to be said about that, but we'll end here for this week. Welcome to you.
You tell a very compelling story.
My kids say so too.
Cliffhanger. Yes.